This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. It's Fun Friday. And as always, for Fun Fridays, we've got the funnest guy ever.
Yeah, kick it off with the worst.
It gets better after this.
Yeah, it gets more fun after me. I'm the benchmark.
Stay tuned for the evening edition.
Yes.
Man, I'm digitalculturethepop.com here with us. We're talking about the energy of tomorrow. We're going to talk about data.
Yeah, right. We're going to talk about data, yes, today.
And are you seeing the data, it really could become the currency of the future?
Well, in a sense, it already is. Data is already a resource. There's a nice Economist article on it this week, and they use the analogy of data being like oil flowing down the fuel pipes. And it's actually quite a good analogy, because we're actually seeing the influence of the energy companies, the oil companies, which have been the big economic drivers of the last sort of 100-150 years. We're finally seeing their dominance being broken. We can switch to renewables. There are more efficient systems. And we're seeing them being replaced by data companies. But still, in the same way that oil flows down pipes across the world and powers our homes and our devices, so information and data is also flowing along pipes underneath the oceans and into our homes. So it's quite a nice analogy.
Right. If you think about it, I mean, of course, there's all these talk about data analytics, the sexiest new career being a data scientist and, business intelligence,
for sure,
and
yes,
all that. So that's sort of information that we're not harnessing. If harnessed well, you know, it's big money. And if you just think about, the last 40 years and how the Sultan of Brunei used to be the richest man in the world. And
absolutely.
then straight after that, it was Bill Gates, right?
And it's like, what? Yeah, exactly. And now the I think the five biggest companies in the US now, it's Apple, it's Microsoft, it's Amazon,
it's Facebook,
and one more that I can't remember, but they're all data companies. Mm. The market has changed completely.
Right. Now, how aware are we of the value of the personal data we hand over to companies?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we look at the convenience of using all of these services, and we don't actually think about the information that we're giving to them. In the past, we've tended to think about tech companies, when it comes to data, as being about advertising. But this kind of market, when we started using Facebook, the location services were very, very basic. People used Foursquare and they were the mayor of buildings. Mm-hmm. We've moved on a lot from there. We now give access to microphones and cameras. They're pulling information about our lives from all kinds of places.
Toasters.
Yeah, toasters, exactly. But you see, everything can listen to us. Everything we write can be analyzed. Everything we post. And a lot of these services, when you see sort of Facebook's influence in WhatsApp and Instagram and all these other companies as well, you can see the kind of power they have to bring all of this data and information together. So it becomes this very valuable and a colossal resource. I mean, that's why we're talking about it replacing things like oil as a resource and a currency in terms of volume. So we're not really aware of the value of what we're giving to companies, and we don't really do a lot to kind of limit the access that they have to data. I mean, every time we download a program from the net or we open an app and we say, will you give access to? Yes, please. Because it's a lot easier. But every time we do that, we're allowing somebody else to track us, to take information about us, and to sell that information to other people.
Okay. What about the value of the data itself? Could we figure out what each of Facebook's users is worth?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I often get clients asking me what is the value of a like on Facebook or on Instagram. And I always tell them, there's no kind of universality to this kind of thing. It's a very new market, and it is a market. So as in the trade of oil or any other commodity, the price is going to fluctuate. Where we are right now is at the very beginnings of this market. So people are kind of testing prices rather than the market kind of functioning very, very smoothly. But of course, there are going to be huge variations depending on the kind of person you are, where you live, what country you come in, what kind of income, what kind of spending habits you have. So data is very much of different value to different companies and different scenarios. So, for example, a mom and pop store wanting to get information about customers in its, you know, in a suburb, they're probably not going to be paying the same rate as, say, a political polling agency that is trying to draw up a picture of how to target people for national election campaigns, for example. So there's very wide and very big differences between these kind of areas when it comes to the actual value of the information that we generate.
Do you think we're, you know, paying too high a price for our social media habits? Buyers beware.
Well, yeah. I mean, as we said, you know, it's this convenience thing. We give our information very, very freely. We click, yes, take my information, take my data, access my Facebook profile, access my my Gmail account. And these are the things that can be potentially very, very lucrative, because anyone that has access to, again, your email sees what other things you subscribe to. And also they can start, you know, mining for keywords in your account as well. And that helps to build not just a marketing profile of you, but a behavioral and psychological profile of you as well. So there's an awful lot of information. And this is also pretty much the big secret to the success of companies like Google and Facebook. You know, they are very profitable because they get an awful lot of information from us and ask very little in return. You know, we don't get much. In terms of the service that they give to us, it's very small versus the value of the information that we're giving to them. And that's one of the reasons that you see services like Twitter or Instagram finding it much more difficult to turn a profit, because they're mining a much less rich stream of data. You're not giving Twitter the same kind of in-depth information. So they're kind of limited to selling advertising. The profiling that they can get from you is not the same as Google, you know, taking your searches for absolutely everything and having access to your Gmail accounts.
Twitter's limited to 140 characters. Instagram's just a photo.
You know, and the nature of the communication that you're doing, whereas with Facebook, it's much richer. They have access to a lot more information, and they're very aggressive in the way getting you to build up your profile, your likes and your dislikes, because, again, it's not really in your benefit to say, oh, you know, I like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and the last book I read. But it's very much in their interests for you to give that information.
What about the scale of the companies? Are we repeating the problems of the past, you know, creating the next generation companies that will be too big to fail?
Well, again, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, should we split up companies like Google or Facebook into sort of more manageable units? Do they have this kind of monopoly power over the market? And yes, there is kind of an element of that, but when you look at these companies, they're not massive employers in the way that the companies of old were. When you look at you know, big pharmaceutical or chemical companies like Cargill or Koch Industries, you know, they employ hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people globally. When you look at Foxconn, which is a supplier to Apple, they have or had at one point over 1 million employees. Apple itself, which is the far bigger company by value, has hundreds of thousands fewer employees. And again, apart from Amazon, we're not really seeing these companies. They're not into physical production. They're not dominating the markets in certain ways. So again, if you remove them from the economy, they're not interconnected. One of the reasons, for example, Goldman Sachs, you know, given all that money in the last crash, was because it owns indirectly thousands and thousands of other companies. If Goldman Sachs were to fail, it would bring down a large part of the world economy. If Facebook were to fail, there'd just be a lot of people who are going, oh, okay, you know, I can't tell people what I like today. Yes, there would be the effects on the stock exchange, but it's not so hardwired into the physical global economy in the same way that a lot of these kind of traditional companies are.
Okay. Are existing business regulations, antitrust laws, for example, are they sufficient to protect us?
Well, again, you know, traditionally with this kind of antitrust stuff, we've always looked at size of companies and their market dominance as being, you know, what trigger these kind of antitrust investigations. But the tech industries tend towards monopolies anyway. You go to Facebook because everybody else is on Facebook. If there were 20 different Facebooks, you would have to belong to 20 different Facebooks. People don't want to do that. Mm. And then there's the argument as well that if you split up, say, a company like Google into 5 or 6 different entities, especially the one that still controls search, is probably going to become dominant again, simply because that's where people prefer to go and get their search results from. But at the same time, their power to distort markets is not the same. I mean, for example, I think The Economist used the example of Standard Oil, which was broken up in the early 20th century because it was starting to dominate the global market for a distribution of oil. Mm. You can't really say the same about a company like Facebook or Google because there are fewer barriers to entry. People can still come in to that market. They don't have the power to prevent you. Yes, they have a market dominance, but they're not actually able to price you out. If you offer something that's attractive enough, if you start to attract those consumers, then your company can still grow. So right. I think what we need is probably a new set of tools. We need, for example, perhaps to be looking at behavior. So the example of Facebook buying WhatsApp a few years ago. Now, they were a company that at the time had 60 employees, and they were bought for $22 billion, even though they had no revenue. So maybe that should have been a red flag warning, because that's perhaps saying that they're going out to stifle competition. Perhaps they're seeing a company maybe that would have the power to challenge them in the future, and they've gone to kind of bring that within the same family. And the other thing as well, especially when we're looking at mergers or takeovers like this, is actually looking at the amount of data this combined entity is then going to control. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about controls of volumes of information. So yes, I think our antitrust rules probably have to change quite a lot.
Right. And who is doing the most to protect our data? The companies themselves, or pressure from consumer groups and governments?
Well, this is one of the interesting things because, you know, again, traditionally in this kind of marketplace, you would expect it to be governments and legislation that leads the way. What we're actually seeing is that it's the companies themselves, in a sense, because they're a lot more nimble and able to respond to the kind of consumer advocacy. So, for example, the outcry over the murders and the shootings and everything on Facebook Live. So Facebook responded by hiring 3,000 new moderators. Now, there hasn't been any government legislation to ask them to do that, simply because there is a much longer gap for legislation to come into place. And also with legislation, we don't always get it right the first time. I mean, the Industrial Revolution has been going on for the last sort of 300 years, and we're still kind of tweaking information and laws around what companies can do and what rights workers have. So, you know, it's not something that we can get right instantly and overnight. And I think that's one of the issues when we talk about technology. We think everything is going to be the same as making a Google search. Mm. You can just type it in and there'll be a result, and you know, you've suddenly got 2 million hits and 2 million solutions. But you don't think that what this is doing is just indexing solutions and thoughts that people have already had. So it might take you a second to find what those solutions are, but the thinking behind those results actually took decades. So we don't actually see the process behind this kind of thing. There aren't any easy solutions. There is going to be a lot of horse trading and jockeying, a lot of trial and error. And of course, there's going to be, you know, lots of competing viewpoints that have to be balanced. So at the moment, we're finding that it's the power of consumers and their influence over the companies that's having the most effect in the short term. Mm.
Okay, so where do you think the next battle point will be?
Well, this is one of the things we talked about last week, the Amazon Look, the device that has Alexa, which is Amazon's version of Siri or Google Assistant, and it links everything up to your camera and microphone so it can see you and it can hear you. So I think this is going to be the kind of next stage in this kind of evolution of data, not just the things that we do online, not just the things that we write on a computer or a smartphone. It's going to be about the data that these companies are able to harvest from our, you know, our physical lives, watching us, listening to us, monitoring us. So I think this is going to be this is the next battle.
What role can we play in democratizing our data?
Well, as we've just kind of mentioned, one of the reasons that the tech companies are so proactive, like, for example, the response to the Facebook Live murders, is because these companies need us a lot more than we need them. We stay with them because it's convenient for us to do so. But when you see all the kind of new functionality that the companies bring on, they're not doing it because they want to. For them, the most cost-effective thing is not to add any more functionality. Mm. It's to stay still because new functionality costs them a lot of money. If you look at the 3,000 new moderators, if you estimate that each one of those earns maybe an average of $30,000 each, that's nearly $100 million in additional costs.
Right.
So, you know, that's as a response to outrage from us, their consumers. So they are very kind of beholden to us. And, you know, this is the kind of environment that the tech companies were born into. They're not born into that old world business economy where, you know, the company has the money and the power and they sell something to the consumers. They're taking something from us and selling it to other people. So there's a very different dynamic, a very different relationship. And that actually gives us quite an amazing amount of power. You know, they kind of have to do what we want them to do because we are their commodity. And we have to sort of seize that initiative, because even if you say, okay, if I as one person sign, you know, close my Facebook account, they're not really going to care. They've got 2 billion other people. But statistically, if the reasons that cause you to close your account, those will also cause other people to close the account. And these companies think about everything in terms of numbers and volume. So they are very, very scared of you switching off or switching services and looking to someone else. So yeah, the power is very, very much ours.
Right. I'm just thinking whether we should start calling this Freaky Friday instead of Fun Friday. Matt Armitage from culturepop.com. He'll be joined by another Englishman in just a moment. This is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.